श्री भगवान उवाच मिथो भजन्ति ये सख्या स्वर्थैकान्तोद्यमाहिति न तत्र सोरिदं धर्मा स्वर्थं तद्धि नन्यथा. Sri Bhagavan Uvacha. Now, what does that mean? Simplest question. Excuse me? Yes. It is the simplest question, but it is the most important question, in this, especially in this part of the Bhagavatam. This is Satyam. Satyam Parama, the Supreme Absolute Truth, Bhagavan, who is speaking here. Now, why is it so important that we remember this? That this is Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is speaking. Krishna has been explained earlier in the first canto as Krishna Stu Bhagavan Swayam. That he is the Sayam, the original person, the original personality of Godhead. Later, in the second canto, in the third canto, it has been described that universes pour from his skin holes. He has been shown in the seventh canto, what incarnation have we heard about in the seventh canto? Excuse me? Lord Nisringadeva, who has come from a pillar, an incarnation of the Lord appearing from a pillar, because Hiranyakashipu had dared to threaten Prahlad Maharaj and said, "You're always speaking of someone more powerful than me." Hiranyakashipu, the archetypal demon, thinking of himself the center of the universe. Of course, none of us think of ourselves as the center of the universe, but Hiranyakashipu was a demon, and he did. And he said, "You're always talking about someone more powerful than me. Where is he, Prahlad? He's everywhere, Father." "Well, we'll see if he's everywhere." And he pulled out his sword. "But because," he said, "because before I kill you, I'm going to kill him. Is he everywhere? That means he's in that pillar, yes? Or that pillar, or that one. Yes, he's everywhere." And then Hiranyakashipu struck the pillow with his fist, and suddenly he heard an unlimitedly powerful roar. Hiranyakashipu was so... maybe you could ask the devotees outside to be a little more quiet, please. An unlimitedly powerful roar emanated. But Hiranyakashipu was so proud and so self-assured, he wasn't afraid. And rather, he was thinking, "If any difficulty comes, I will be able to protect myself. I will defend, because I am so powerful. I cannot be killed. Who can fight with me? Who can defeat me?" And Lord Nisringadeva came and ripped him apart effortlessly and took out his intestines and placed it around his neck as a garland. That is Bhagavan. Bhagavan is the one universes come from his skin holes. He has an expansion, Garbhadaksha Vishnu, who enters into every universe, and Kiradaksha Vishnu enters within the heart of every living entity. And he is not diminished. He is in every atom. He is between every atom. Mama Angsa Teja Sambhava. Everything is being supported and resting upon him. And that person, that supreme person, who the Brahma Jyoti, Brahmanohi Pratishtaham, he is the basis of the Brahman effulgence. That person is speaking. And why is it so important that we understand that it is that all-powerful person who's speaking? Why? Obvious question, obvious answer. Why is it so important that we keep that in mind? And who is he speaking, and what does he happen to be doing at the moment that we're hearing from him? Some of you may not be following exactly where this part of the Bhagavatam is, but for those who are following, what is he doing? What is he doing? He's got a bunch of girls in the middle of the night in a dark, secluded place, and he's dancing with them. Or not yet. And yet, if we try to impose our consciousness upon Krishna, upon the scene that's going on here, we will misunderstand everything. And we will mistake the highest love for its perverted counterpart, the lust of this material world, kama esha, krodha esha, rajaguno samudbhava, which is born out of the mode of passion. And this has nothing to do with that whatsoever. And prior to reading the 10th canto at all, and what to speak of this most secret and confidential part of the 10th canto, one must be, at least one's conceptions have to be proper about what is going on. Otherwise, one will completely mistake it. And as one time I was in the Wari temple in Bangladesh, and because I had been studying a little Bengali from the school there, the Heed language school, was it was basically run by Christians for the purpose of converting whatever remaining Hindus were to Christianity. They were afraid of trying to convert one Muslim, because they knew what would happen if they did that. But Hindus, anyway, shanti, 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 everything is... it's all one. But some of the people visited the temple, and one of the men said, "How can you worship a god who dances?" Yeah, he said this to me, "with the wives of others in the middle of night. How could you worship a god who does this?" Not only can he not be God, he can't even be a moral human being. And you worship him? So this mentality is exactly what occurs within a sensitive and pious human being, or even an impious human being, when he hears about the rasa lila of Krishna without a proper philosophical understanding of what is going on, and without having neither the purification nor the proper conceptions in place of what is going on. What is going on is not at all what you think is going on. The same thing in the material world. In the material world, we think something's going on. Here I am struggling, trying to enjoy, but that's not what's going on. In the material world, what's going on is the material energy, Maya, is completely manipulating us, filling us, whipping us, filling us with so many material desires. I want this, I need that, and I'm going to get this, and then I'm going to be happy. But this is not what's going on. In fact, we're being manipulated. We're thinking, we're choosing to act in this way or that way. But we're not. This is the realm of Maya. This is Maya, and we're under control. Maya means that which is not. It is illusion. Practically speaking, because we are tiny, insignificant living entities, it is impossible for us to be in touch with reality. Reality is huge. It is complete. And we are so tiny. And we think in our pride, oh, I know what's going on, and this person's doing this, and that person's doing that. And I'm going to manipulate reality for my purposes. This is called Maya or illusion, because we are like kaputli, puppets on the string. Or in Bengali, it's putulnats, yes? The dancing dolls. We are just dancing dolls. And who's pulling the strings? We think we are, but it is Maya. Daivyesh gunamayi mama maya dratya. Passion, goodness, and ignorance. Just pulling. Passion says, just like the kaputli, the marionettes. Passion says, you want this, don't you? And then just like the string gets pulled and the hand goes up, yes, I want it. Other hand, another string gets pulled, this happens, another string gets pulled, we move forward, but it's being pulled and pushed, impelled by the modes of material nature. Everyone here is simply a dancing doll, and we think otherwise. And this is Maya. It is not what is truly going on, what we perceive. Sinful actions are poured on everyone, sinful reactions due to the sinful deeds that those in this material world commit, and that's what's going on. All the karma being released, sinful karma, and some punya, some pious karma too. But that's what's going on. But we cannot perceive it as such, because we are not, in fact, in touch with reality. We are covered by illusion. And inside everyone's heart is Krishna, Savasya Chahamrithi Sanavisto. And we cannot perceive that. Dehismin Purusha Para. Within everyone's heart is Krishna. And he's the Upadrastanamanta. He's the overseer, the Anumanta. He's permitting, unless Krishna says you can move your hand, you cannot move your hand. If he withdraws his sanction, you can no longer move. And here we are so proudly thinking we're going to make our way in the world, we're going to achieve this, and I'm going to do that. And if Krishna says no, it all stops. It all stops. So we don't have the ability to perceive what's actually going on in the material world unless we get some very, very good Shastric instruction that tells us what reality is from a higher perspective. And similarly, when we hear about this most sacred And most wonderful, the deepest of all pastimes. We cannot understand what's going on. Pastimes means lila. Lila means these are the playings of Krishna and his internal energy. We will mistake it. We will superimpose our minds upon what is going on unless we are properly situated in both purity and conceptually. And of course, of the two, conceptually is easier than the purity. But the glories or a glory of Krishna consciousness is if we understand conceptually the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. If we understand it, that will purify us, because we will understand that we are not the center of existence. A very simple and obvious fact. We are not the center of existence. Krishna is. And he's unlimitedly powerful. And we are meant to serve him. Being a servant, no one goes to the... Where did you go to the university?
In La Trobe.
Yes. Never in India?
In Kurukshetra.
Yes. Did you study how to be a servant there? Or did you study IT?
Engineering.
No one goes to the university to get their higher knowledge in how to serve. But that's what everyone ends up doing. We go and study to learn how to gain power in this world. Power for what purpose? Huh?
Money.
And money for what purpose?
To enjoy senses.
Yeah, so dharma, artha, kam. Artha is required for kam, for enjoyment. And without power, you can't enjoy. And without money, you have no power. This is illusion, this way of thinking. But this is how everyone's thinking. No one goes to learn. No one gets their higher education to learn how to serve. And that, ironically, is what everyone ends up doing. This is the irony of the material world. What you want, it turns around and forces you back. And if someone can actually learn this, how to properly be a servant, what to speak of serving Krishna. Of course, if one learns the art of serving Krishna, and that's what we are learning by studying the Bhagavatam, and we've heard the most incredible description of the perfect, purest, deepest servants of Krishna. The gopis in the previous chapter, which is considered by most Gaudiya Vaishnavas the topmost chapter that describes love, the deepest chapter, this 31st chapter, the songs of the gopis in separation. We've heard that, and here, in this section, we're going to hear the philosophy. It will give us some explanation of what we had just heard previously in the Leela. If one learns to actually serve purely, one becomes such a controller. Purely means with love. Love means anya vilasita sanyam gana kama anavrita. Anukulena Krishna anushilanam. I don't want anything for myself. I just want to please you. That is what love means. That's what service means. Now, what? Eventually, we'll get to the verse where we'll be describing Krishna's going to describe different ways of reciprocation. because anyway, it's such a wonderful pastime. We'll probably have to go back a little bit. But when one, or if one, somehow or another, by the greatest of fortunes, perfects loving service, which means bhakti, which means developing prema bhakti, which is the parama purusharta, the thing that is to be gained in this world, the topmost thing, then one becomes so powerful. And we'll hear this from Krishna's own mouth at the last verse of this chapter, that he can control the Parama Ishwara, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Now, what could be more powerful than controlling that person whose universes come from the pores of his skin? What could be more powerful than controlling the person who can rip apart Hiranyakashipu with his claws and appear from a pillar personally just to protect his devotee? One, if one becomes a servant, a loving servant of Krishna, then one becomes powerful. Then one is fully independent. Then one enjoys. Then one controls. But otherwise, it is just illusion. So this is what we're hearing about. Bhagavan means... Bhaga means opulences, Van means he who possesses. Sadashraya Pona, he's full of what? Perfect. What are his great opulences?
Strength.
Unlimited strength, an ocean of strength, unlimited strength. What other one?
Beauty,
unlimitedly beautiful. This is Bhagavan, unlimited. We see people in this world who have some strength, some beauty. They're attractive. But this one, Bhagavan, is unlimitedly attractive. What other quality?
Knowledge.
Knowledge or wisdom. What else?
Renunciation.
We always say that one last. But it's okay, renunciation. Yes, unlimitedly renounced, famous, yes, and one more, wealth. We always forget wealth. We prefer renunciation, so we say that early, and wealth last. So he's speaking now. We remember he's speaking. And what does he say? Because before we hear his words, how many of you who are here now were in the class yesterday? Present. Okay, so we'll just, he's been asked a question. Krishna has been asked a question by the gopis. And the question was, and they were trying to trap him by their question in their very, very clever and sweet and indirect way. They wanted him to admit that he had treated them improperly and not reciprocated properly with their love, because their love is complete. They wanted to trap him with a tricky question into admitting that he wasn't a very good reciprocator of love, he wasn't a proper lover. So they asked him, "Oh Krishna, some people reciprocate the affection only of those who are affectionate to them. You love me, I love you. You're angry at me, I'm angry at you. This is whatever. You hate me, I hate you. You give me some affection, this much, I give you this much affection." Some people reciprocate the affection only of those who are affectionate towards them. That's one type of a person. Second type. Others show affection even to those who are indifferent or inimical. They just pour affection regardless of how the person treats them. They're just giving and giving and giving. That's the second type. The third type, and yet others will not show affection towards anyone. You treat me wonderfully, you treat me terribly, I remain neutral. Dear Krishna, please properly explain this matter to us. Now, who are they indirectly pointing towards? Krishna. Because everything is done in Vrindavan in a very indirect way. Why? This is the culture, but why is everything done indirectly? Huh? That's on the negative level and the grossest level. Yes.
Somewhere or other Krishna said that he likes things by
Parokshavat, 11th canto. But why? That's my question. Why? But why? Why? Why are things done indirectly? Why? Yes.
Increase the rus.
Yes, exactly. Vrindavan means rus. Rus means the sweetness, the transcendental sweetness in exchanges. Because Krishna's desire, because he's Bhakta Vatsalya, because he loves his devotees, he wants to increase their ecstasy. And how to do that? How to increase the intensity of the experience, the relationship. This is Krishna's greatest expertise, and all the residents of Vrindavan are also expert at this. They want rasa to be generated. Different ecstatic mellows, as Prabhupada translated it, following the translation of his Guru Maharaj. And this is a science. This is described, the science of what makes up rasa is described in Bhakti Samhita Sindhu, Nectar and Devotion. The different elements, ingredients that have to be put, that are put in to the mixture so that rasa will be generated, ecstatic love which can rise up to the platform of Mahabhava. So it is a great, great, great science. And part of the science of generating rasa is how to speak indirectly. Well, what's an example of this? Just like in... when we went to that language school in Bangladesh, we asked, well, how do you say thank you in Bengali? And they said, they explained that people don't, they say in the West, and also even amongst the ISKCON Bengali devotees, they'll tease how the Westerners are always saying thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, every little thing, thank you, every little, yes? But there's other ways to say it, and this is what the ladies said, the teacher said. She said, if you go to someone's house and they've just fed you, they've invited you over to prasadam. She didn't say prasadam, but for food. And you want to thank them. So you don't say, oh, thank you, thank you, thank you. But you say, anek koshto korechi, which means, I've caused you so much trouble. I've caused you so much trouble. You had to undergo so much effort to feed me. And then the reply isn't, you're welcome. It's, no, 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 no. I have, and it was no trouble at all. It was just my happiness to do this. So in this way, by speaking a little indirectly, the affection increases in the dealing. So the gopis here are asking this question because they're angry at Krishna. Yes, anger is possible in love because it is not just oneness. There is ecstasy, varieties of different tastes and ecstasies. This is what Goloka Vrindavan is like. This one change of ecstatic mood to the next, to the next, to the next, to the next, to the next. And it is unlimitedly, continuously, eternally revealing one shift in ecstasy, rasa. The next, there's the vyabhacharis come in, all the different transitory emotions. And then the sattvika bhavas come in, which are the most intense emotions of ecstasy. And the anubhavs that follow the emotion. And it is based on the sthaibhav, which is, sthai means it's situated permanently there. And the sthaibhav, which is the essence of the rasa, that is one's relationship with Krishna. If you don't have a relationship with the person, there is no emotion that's produced. You read in the newspaper that in this country so many people were just killed, in that country so many people were killed, and you don't feel anything. But if you hear that two people died in your village, or the city you come from, or someone you have a relationship, then everyone is crying and crying and crying. They show the pictures in the newspapers of the people who are crying or the people who are angry because someone has been killed. But we don't experience anything because there is no sambandha, there is no relationship. So therefore, for us actually to read this and taste the sweetness of this most intimate section of the Bhagavatam, one must have developed this sthaibhav, this full ecstatic relationship with Krishna. This is at least the platform of bhava bhakti, in fact. Very high. What one has taken shelter, achieved the shelter of the internal energy, Krishna's internal energy, instead of this maya shakti that's bewildering, that's here. And then if love is there, then as one reads or hears the Bhagavatam, one will actually experience all the ecstasies that the gopis are experiencing and that Krishna is exchanging and that's going on in Vrindavan. This is rasa tattva. This is how rasa works. Unless there is an identification of oneself. So like we see something's happened in Iraq, or something's happened here, or something's happened in North Korea, or some part of the world, or Western Australia, or somewhere, or South Africa, or in the Darfur region of Sudan. We don't feel anything. I mean, unless one has an expanded sense of identification, because there's no placing of self, feeling of self there. It has nothing to do with me. But our family, or our possessions, or our country, we impose our sense of self on them, and therefore it affects us. What happens? Krishna consciousness means to withdraw the sense of self from everything of this world. Naham vipro na chanarapati na vivashana sudro naham varni na griyapati na minishvatiyava. I am nothing of this world. I'm not the body. I'm not the mind. But what am I? I am Krishna's, the servant's. Servants of the servants of the servants of those whose only business is to please Krishna, Gopi Bharta Parakamalaya, Dasa Dasana Das, withdrawing all false sense of identity and taking me, who I am, and placing that Jivara Sarup Hoy Krishna Nityadas. I am Krishna's servant. Nitya, eternally. To be fixed in that with full love, not even duty, or not up some form of obligation or fear of the material world or anything, but out of love, that places one, and not only love, but a love with a special flavor. What is that love with a special flavor? That is Vrindavan, in a special mood. A special mood of the residents of Vrindavan. This is so rare. This is so rare. This is Mahaprabhu's gift. The most rarest thing. This type of love, Srila Rupa Goswami says, sudolava. So rare, so rare. Why? Because it is moksha lagudakrit. It minimizes liberation. And we'll hear about this. We won't get to the verse we're supposed to read today. Today, but tomorrow we'll speak about that. It minimizes liberation. Why do we do what we do? It's either to get pleasure or to remove misery. This bhava bhakti, it makes completely insignificant either desire to enjoy in the material world or to be free from any suffering. We can't even imagine, practically speaking, because our minds are grasping what we think will give us pleasure and rejecting what we think will cause us misery. This has nothing to do with this. This bhakti is Krishna Karshini Sanjandanandama Visheshatma. It's so powerful, it attracts Krishna. And it places one, as Mahaprabhu himself says, Anandam Bhudivardaram, in an ever increasing ocean of ecstasies, Sarvatma Snapanam. It's bathing in ecstasy. When we read or hear about what Mahaprabhu came to teach us, what he was experiencing, we read this in Chaitanya Charitamrita, it's so far beyond what the material mind can even conceive of. But it is bathing in ecstasy continuously. So do you want to go to that platform? Or do you prefer to stay here in the material world? So yet we can all say, if I can say so easily, all those who want to be raised to the platform of Goloka Vrindavan, raise your hand, and we all raise our hand. And all those who are willing to pay the price, raise your hand. And then whoops. The price is everything. Oh, everything on every level. And that's what the gopis have exhibited. They've given everything to Krishna. Everything, everything on the deepest level continuously. They are such lovers of Krishna. They have no consideration that's selfish. In the slightest way, not even the slightest tinge or fragrance is left of anything like that. That is not even considered. They just simply love Krishna. But as we all know, you can't get anything of value without paying the price. We want mercy, though, of course. Sometimes a beggar will come along And some very, very compassionate person will see that he wants something, but look at him. But he wants it so much, and he's sincere. All right. You take it. All right, here it is. You know. All right, just go. Take it and go. That's what we require, because practically speaking, we're so trapped in the material world and filled with so many anarthas, aparads. We don't have the currency to purchase very much, so we need mercy, and therefore we are here to get some mercy. But before one can get some mercy, what are the prerequisites? In practical terms, say you want something, say you're a beggar. Well, some begging practice, some begging instructions now. What will evoke the wealthy person to, Yeah, that's interesting to hear that. What do you think?
Desperation.
Desperation, greed, humility. What do you think?
Humility.
Deep humility. Is humility enough?
Desire.
Without desire.
Perseverance.
Perseverance. That's, if you want to learn the perseverance of a beggar, you go to Vrindavan. They'll chase you for 2 blocks. Humility. Oh, you need a lot of ingredients. A lot of ingredients in there. Or another way to look at, when the baby wants the mother, and the mother has something else to do. What will the mother do? Well, this one's for the mothers. What does the mother, when the baby wants the mother, but the mother has something else to do, what will the mother do? First thing isn't surrender. They don't do that, huh? Placate. Yes. What the baby wants the mother's breast to drink. And what do they do in Australia? When the mother doesn't want to feed the baby, what do? They put something on, they call it a dummy. Because if you accept this piece of plastic or rubber over the real thing, you're a dummy. So we want Krishna, and Krishna turns us into dummies by giving us so many other things, and we take it. Well, what do you want? You want to be happy, you want to be wealthy, you want to be known as a good speaker. What do you want? You want to be in charge and control, what do you want? Okay, dummy, take it. I'm holding this back. I'm holding the real thing back. Because this real thing is so powerful. It is so powerful that it will place me under your control. And as long as you're a dummy, I'm not going to give it to you. It's going to place me under your control, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It is so powerful. So you take all these other things. Yeah, take it. Go away. But when the baby, cries in a specific way, when the mother knows that they're serious, that's when the mother immediately comes. So seriousness is important. This is what I want, I don't want anything else. So we say that, this is what I want, I don't want anything else. And Krishna will say, oh yeah? Let's see. Because remember, this is so powerful that I want to give you this. But let's see what you want. Let's see what you want. Let's see if your container, the container of your heart, has cracks and holes of insincerity, and what I want to give you would just pour through. Let's see. So Bhagavan is going to, in this indirect way, he's going to describe answer to the gopis' question about there's three kinds of people who reciprocate love. One reciprocates with according to how much love is there. That'll be the description that we hear Krishna respond to in this 17th verse. And then those who are give no matter what, because they thought they've trapped Krishna. Because if Krishna says, if someone just reciprocates equally, then what kind of love is that? And if someone just gives to everyone equally, what kind of love is that? What's the use of loving? And if someone is neutral, what's the use of loving? They thought they've caught Krishna, they've constructed this trap for Krishna. And by answering this question, he can't win. But of course, Krishna, the gopis are very clever, but Krishna is also very clever, most clever. But they are more clever. But he is more clever. And they are more clever. Still more clever. But he is more clever. This is such an incredible conception of the absolute truth. Satyam paramadhimayi. Satyam paramadhimayi. This is the most incredible concept, understanding of the absolute truth. This is the gift. This is the fruit of the Vedas, Nigamakalpatrum. This is the fruit of the Vedas, of all religion. This is the perfection of religion. This manifestation of the absolute truth, Bhagavan Sri Krishna, Krishna Stu Bhagavan. It is on such a different level than what people normally conceive of religion, and that the Bhagavatam calls is Dharma Protijava Kaitava, Projita Kaitava, cheating religion, duplicity. It is not actually meant for the pleasure of Krishna, it is still self-centered. And the Bhagavatam wants to give something very different than that. So we want it? This we have to ask this question very deeply. Do we actually want? What is it that we want? What is it that we want? And what Srila Prabhupada and Mahaprabhu and all the Vaishnavas wish to tell us is, this is what you should want. You study Bhagavatam, you hear Shastra, and chant Hare Krishna. Teta, Dhapana, Marjana, these other desires will be washed away, far away. And when people hear that, they think, uh-oh, this is a very dangerous religion. Okay, we'll stop here. And thank you very much. Any questions or comments?
Can we suck on the dummy for a while and then give it another chance?
Yes, if you want. But you won't get the nourishment that you're longing for. We have material worlds is relentless in its dealing with dummies. It will beat us, it will crush us. It will teach us what it wants to teach us, the lesson of there is no hope here. But suffering in and of itself is not sufficient to make bhakti take birth in the heart. What takes birth in the heart from suffering, without any, if there's no bhakti, is simply another plan I may have failed this time, but next time, knowing what I know now, I'll be able to succeed in my enjoyment even more. Sucking the dummy, sucking the dummy, sucking the dummy. So yes, we can for as long as we want. But when it's time, there's a verse in the, perhaps in the fourth canto, that's where the Lord says, when it's time, when the time of the living entity's engagement in the material world is coming to its close, then he gains the association of devotees. But also, then also we gain the association of devotees, that's when the time works. So when Krishna, Guru Krishna Prasadi Bhai Bhakti Latabhis, when Krishna is indicating that it's the end now, it's time to come home, he puts one in the association of devotees. Why? Why does he choose one person or another person? There's different answers to that question. But regardless, Mahaprabhu has cast his net. He wishes everyone to fall in it. Do you want to say anything more on that?
We want to tell something about Raghunandan Thakur.
Huh?
Raghunandan Thakur.
Oh, today is like...
It's at
even. Oh. Great devotee of Sri Kanda. Raise your hand if you've been to Sri Kanda. Kanda. Only me. You haven't been there even? Wonderful place. Huh? Oh. You live in Mayapur. Great devotee. There are the devotees of Sri Kanda, which is very close to the place of also Srinivas Thakur near Katwa, the place where Mahaprabhu took sannyas. There are special devotees who live there. All devotees of Mahaprabhu. The leader was Narahari Sakar. Great, great devotees. And Raghunandana and Mukunda Das was also, these are the three most famous residents of Sri Kanda who were very, very dear to Mahaprabhu. Mahaprabhu was very dear to them. And also Lochan Das Thakur, he wrote the Chaitanya Mangal there, and there's this huge tree under which he wrote it, and he gained the association of Abhiram, Ramdas Abhiram, a great devotee of Nityananda Prabhu, who used to have a whip, and he would whip someone with his whip, and by being whipped by the whip, they would get ecstatic prema bhakti. Different preaching style. But Raghunandana Thakur, when he was a young boy, this is the very famous story about him. When he was a young boy, his father was worshipping a deity of Krishna, a Gopal deity of Krishna, another Gopal. And one time, the father had to go somewhere one day. So he asked his young son to do the puja. And the boy said, okay. And the boy was very, very, very simple and pure. So he made an offering to Gopal of food. His mother cooked the food. He made an offering to Gopal and said, you have to eat this. And he went away. And he came back and it was still there. And the boy was so simple and pure, he became an anxiety. He said, you have to eat it. You have to eat it. My father said I should offer you this food and I have to feed you. And you're taking it. He's going to become so angry at me if you don't eat everything. Eat. You have to eat. Oh, Gopal, you have to eat. And Gopal just stood there. And the boy began crying and crying. You have to eat, Gopal. Please eat this food. My father's going to become so angry at me. Please eat. You have to eat. So the deity became so touched by the boy's devotion that he came down and started eating. And the boy just accepted it. He saw the deity come down, saw the deity go back. And so then after the puja was over, he brought the plates and everything to his mother and said, "Where's the prasadam?" "Oh, the deity ate it." And the mother thought, "Oh, I have a very clever boy over here." Who ate it? "Are you sure you didn't take just a little?" "No, Gopal ate it. He ate everything. He didn't leave anything." So she was very, very upset because she didn't want her boy to become such a liar like that. So when her husband, Raghunanda Das Thakur's father came back, she told him everything. "You know, your boy, I don't know what's going to happen to him. He's already such a liar and a cheat. He's eaten all the prasadam." And he said, "The deity ate it," and everything like that. "So you please talk to him. You talk to him." So the father came and talked to him. He said, "Boy, what happened today? Did something special happen today?" "No. I offered the food to Gopal and he ate everything. You told me to offer it and he ate everything. And you didn't take just a little?" "No. He ate everything." The boy couldn't understand why everyone was so unhappy with him. What did he? So he said, "Okay, you can do the puja tomorrow. Let's see. Make sure that he eats." Indeed, he eats. So the next day, the father stood there and watched, hiding. And the boy Raghunandana offered the food to the boga, to the deity. Deity stood there. "You have to eat. Please eat. My father asked me," and he started crying and crying, and the deity came down again, and the father was watching. And then when the deity saw the father was there, he ran back and stood like a deity. But there was still some prasadam left in his hand. So on that deity, it's a little bit. But there's something in his hand like that. I actually have some real nice pictures of the deities. I didn't bring them with me. But very, very wonderful, 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 wonderful place. Srikanda. And during the Rath Yatra ceremony when Mahaprabhu would himself organize all the chanters. And one of the groups of chanters, the devotees from Shantipur were one group, Dvaitacharya led one group, and the devotees from Kulia led one group of chanters. There were seven different groups of chanters during the Rath Yatra. And the devotees from Srikanda, from Kanda, led another of the groups. So they were great, great, great devotees. So there are some temples there in the Samadhi Mandir of Mukunda Das is there. And right next to the temple of Raghunandana, where the deity still is, there's a little Pushkarini. Pushkarini means what? A pond? Yes? Pond. So there's a pond where Nityananda Prabhu had bathed or something. There's some wonderful stories. So Nityananda Prabhu used to preach all over Bengal preaching, because that was Mahaprabhu's order. And he used to cause ecstasy at everyone by his association. And that was his preaching. And he would dress in a very opulent way with 9 strands of jewels and different colored cloth, not at all like a sannyasi. This was all on Mahaprabhu's order. He used to preach everywhere in Bengal. Mahaprabhu sent him saying that no one but you has the power to do this. So you go. Even forsake seeing me to go and preach. And when Nityananda Prabhu, and he took with him many other devotees, Gadadhar Das, Ramdas Abhiram, and they left from Puri, and on their, as they left Puri and they were walking towards Bengal, they all just went into ecstasy, and they were just chanting and dancing the whole way, just chanting and chanting and chanting, and they had no idea where they were going. They just were chanting in ecstasy. And finally they said, excuse me, which way do you get to Bengal? Oh, you have to go back 20 miles. You just passed to the Ganga. They asked how to get to the Ganga. And then they would just dance and go. They acted like cowherd boys most of the time. That was their mood. So Raghunandana is the devotee from Srikanda. That place. And after the disappearance of Narahari Sakar, he held a big festival. And they still have that festival. And there's a big field where they have the festival. And that they have a big festival there every year on the disappearance day of Narahari Sakar. And also, and there's a huge, huge, huge banyan tree. And under that banyan tree, where Lochan Das Thakur, who wrote so many wonderful songs, glorifying Mahaprabhu, and also the Chaitanya Mangal, that's where he sat as he wrote it and gained the inspiration. Just that these places are like a different universe. Everything has life. It's the spiritual world. And these places, they have life. When you go to the West, there's material opulence and this and that and so-called convenience, but there's no life anywhere. In Vrindavan, everything is so alive. It's like everything like vibrates at a different level, Mayapur. And it's like that. And these holy places are like that. They have a special potency due to the holy activities that took place there. Not only the West, but cities in general, they have a different kind of special potency. Maya potency to pull you down and fill you with material desires. So be very careful to not get trapped by that potency. Okay, thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Vaubhakta ki jai, Srila Radha Vallabhada Jagannath Balade, Subhadra Devi, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.